Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the January 4th edition, 2018, I might add, of Off the Deaton Path. My name is Stan Deaton with the Georgia Historical Society, and we welcome you to our first podcast of the new year. We are recording today from the first floor study hall of Millage Hall on the campus of the University of Georgia, overlooking Sanford Stadium in, say that six times fast, Sanford Stadium in beautiful Athens, Georgia. And we welcome you, and as you might guess, we're going to talk this week about the University of Georgia competing for the national championship. All of you out there know, and I know you're all college football fans, especially the 11-year-old who lives in my house, who absolutely loves podcasts where I talk about college football. This week, I want to talk a little bit about the University of Georgia playing for the national championship for the first time in 37 years. The team they're going up against, the University of Alabama, and just review very briefly their great double overtime win on New Year's Day in the Rose Bowl over Oklahoma. It was a great game, as I'm sure you saw, and I know you didn't miss it. Double overtime, it was absolute heart attack city that day, 54-48, a thrilling victory. First time Georgia has ever played Oklahoma, and a great victory. But the game coming up on Monday in Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta is going to be historic for all kinds of reasons. In just his second season, Coach Kirby Smart has the Dogs back in the national championship conversation. And let's face it, for all of the great work that Mark Richt did in his years at the University of Georgia, for all that we heard about his winning record, his what a class act he was, this is really what UGA fans wanted all those years, that he was never able to provide. The closest Mark Richt ever got to getting Georgia into the national championship game was in 2012. You all remember that great SEC championship game. I think the last time Georgia played Alabama was in 2012. In that game, Alabama won in a heartbreaker for Georgia. Had we won that game, we would have gone on to play in the national championship game, as Bama did. That was sort of a semifinal that year before there were football playoffs. We didn't win, and that was as close as Mark Richt got. But in his second season, Kirby Smart has taken the Dogs back to the promised land, and on Monday night, they are going to play for a national championship. Kirby, as I mentioned, is in his second year at Georgia. He's 42 years old. He played defensive back at Georgia from 1995 to 98 under Coach Ray Goff and Jim Donnan. He has led the Dogs to only their fourth 12-win season in school history. The others were, of course, the national championship season of 1980, Mark Richt's two championships in 2002 and 2012, not championships, but seasons that he really succeeded with 12 wins. Kirby Smart, by the way, is making an annual salary of anywhere from $3.75 to $4 million a year. Lots of bonuses written in there. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported this week that Kirby will receive an additional $600,000 for getting the Dogs into the national championship game and an extra $400,000 if they win, which we certainly hope that they do. His opponent will be his former boss, Nick Saban, the evil genius. Actually, that was Steve Spurrier. Nick Saban's not an evil genius. The only people who think that, of course, are people who are LSU fans, because he left there. Nick Saban is the god of football and really the god of sports in America. He is the highest paid coach in all of sports. Yes, higher than Bill Belichick, higher than Greg Popovich, higher than anybody. The man is making $11.125 million a year to be the coach at Alabama, but what enormous pressure there is. Never mind that he lost the Iron Bowl. He's got the tide poised again to win their fifth national championship since 2009. Now, Saban, of course, won the national championship at LSU in 2003. He bolted from there to go to the Miami Dolphins, where, like the aforesaid Steve Spurrier, he failed miserably as a pro coach, went back to college football, and has never looked back. He led Bama to the national championship in 2009, 2011, 2012, and 2015. Last year, he lost in the very last second to Clemson. So he came that close to winning his sixth national title last year. He's looking for it this year against Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs. Now, in addition to his national championships, Saban has won 11 SEC Western Division titles, two at LSU and nine at Bama. He is four times SEC Coach of the Year, but not in 2017, friends. That honor went to Kirby Smart this year. He is 2017 SEC Coach of the Year. And this is going to be a classic matchup against two people who are very familiar with how the other side plays. The experts on ESPN and elsewhere say that if Bama's defense plays against Georgia like it did against Clemson, if they shut down Georgia's running game, then all the pressure will be on our young freshman quarterback, Jake Fromm, and then we're in trouble. Well, I'm not going to make any predictions here, but all I can say is we will see. Oklahoma was supposed to absolutely manhandle Georgia. They had the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in Baker Mayfield, and it didn't happen. They certainly scored at will for a while, but then Kirby found a way to turn it around, and his players did as well. So let's play the game, and let's see what happens. Now, Georgia fans are beside themselves because Georgia is back in the national championship game. And as all Georgia fans know, because it's cemented into our brains, the last time Georgia won the national championship was on January 1st, 1981, following the 1980 season. I followed that season very closely. My big brother was a junior at the University of Georgia that season. I actually went to a couple of those games. We followed on the radio. It's hard to imagine now for sports fans because it's a very different sports landscape at that time. ESPN was in its infancy. In 1980, ESPN had only been on the air for a year. It had no college football contract. There were a handful and a small handful of college football games on Saturdays, usually on CBS, maybe on ABC. And that was about it. Very few of Georgia's games that season were televised. That was a great season for all kinds of reasons. Vince Dooley was in his 17th season at Georgia as their head coach. Herschel Walker was his very first season. And, of course, he personifies everything that has ever been good about the University of Georgia football. There have been very few athletes like Herschel. He was a physical specimen, remains one to this day. If you've seen any of the Heisman House commercials on TV, they say he could still play. And he did it all by doing push-ups and eating fast food, apparently. The guy did like 1,000 push-ups and sit-ups every day in front of his TV when he was growing up in Riceville, Georgia. And he was the first of the great running backs that followed, like Bo Jackson. Just an unbelievable, unbelievable athlete. Well, the season began September 6th in Neyland Stadium in Knoxville, Tennessee. Georgia came into that game ranked 16th, playing at Tennessee. And I have to say this, no one will remember this, and I have to talk to Coach Dooley about it the next time I see him, the chair of the board, chairman of the board of the GHS Board of Curators now, Coach Dooley. I've gotten to know him quite well. Donnie McMickens started ahead of Herschel that day because Herschel was a freshman, and for whatever reason back then, the idea was just different. You didn't start freshman. Tennessee was up 9-0 in the second quarter when Coach Dooley looked at the offensive coordinator and said, "I'm putting Herschel in the game. Do not be afraid to give him the ball." You will remember this, Georgia fans, not because we saw it on TV. I was at my friend Randy Guillebeau's house on this night. I remember it well. We were listening on the radio. The call from Larry Munson was unbelievable. Tennessee was up 15-2 late in the third quarter when Herschel called a toss sweep from 16 yards out and literally ran over Tennessee safety Bill Bates. Look it up on YouTube. Ran over him. This was the first glimpse we had of what a mighty physical specimen Herschel Walker was. And it's a footnote of this game. Herschel Walker and Bill Bates became teammates on the Dallas Cowboys later. But Georgia rallied and won that game 16-15. We didn't know it that night. It was the beginning of something special, and it was the closest game that they would play the entire season. Up 16-15. Herschel, by the way, started every other game after that. Coach Dooley was a quick learner then and now, and he learned his lesson. The very next game was played at home, the first of about five straight in Sanford Stadium. September 13th, we played Texas A&M. Now, that would be an SEC game now. It wasn't then. Georgia rolled to a 42-0 victory. Herschel memorably ran for a 76-yard touchdown, and what everybody remembers about that is how absolutely fast he was. Nobody had ever seen an athlete run like he did. You will remember, he was a dual athlete at Wright County. In Wrightsville, where he went to school, 21 carries, 145 yards that day. He was a track star there as well as a football player, so the speed was on display. Nobody could touch him. Herschel also, of course, had those patented leaps over the line when he would get the ball and just leap over. I should mention, by the way, that Buck Ballew was Georgia's quarterback that year. Several people on that team went on and became legendary. Lindsey Scott, one of the wide receivers. Scott Werner, we'll hear about these people. In fact, in the very next game at in Athens, we played Clemson. We played Clemson every year back then. And I will say, by the way, looking at this schedule from 1980, this would be a very tough schedule today. A lot of bowl teams are here. Tennessee, a down year this year, admittedly, but still always good. Texas A&M, Clemson. Herschel ran for 121 yards that day on September 20th. And by the way, Georgia had moved up to being ranked 10th when we played Clemson that day. Scott Warner had to bail the offense out. He scored on a 67-yard punt return that I remember well. And we won the game 20-16. Again, another close game, but Georgia went on. So they're 3-0 now. The very next week, they play Texas Christian. Again, a bowl team now, very good team. Still ranked 10th at this point. Georgia won that game 34-3 in a runaway. The next weekend, ranked number 6 now, October 11th, we played Mississippi, Ole Miss. Herschel missed most of that game with an injury, didn't play, it didn't matter. We won 28-21, somewhat of a close game. Vanderbilt came up the next weekend, October 18th, still playing in Athens. This was Herschel's game of his career. He rushed 23 times that day for 283 yards, including touchdown runs of 60, 48, and 53 yards. His speed was on display. I remember that game well. Again, listening to it on the radio. So Georgia went into Kentucky on October 25th, ranked number 5 in the nation. And again, another shutout. Pitched their third shutout of the season, won 27-0 in Kentucky. So now we're really on a roll. Come back to Athens on November 1st, ranked number 4, and play the University of South Carolina, who were ranked 14th. This was a matchup between George Rogers, the 1980 Heisman Trophy winner, and Herschel. And Herschel ran for a 76-yard touchdown run that day. He had 43 rushes, 219 yards, and Georgia won the game 13-10. Again, a very close game. That set up the November 8th game in Jacksonville, Florida. Georgia was ranked number 2. Florida was ranked number 20. This game became known as the Miracle on Duval Street, and every Georgia fan can tell you where they were when they saw it. That game was televised by CBS. I had been playing backyard football with my friend Scott Hawes and Chip Avant and Billy Westbrook. We went into my own living room to watch the end of the game. We were listening on the radio. Herschel did rush that day 37 times for 238 yards, and late in the game, Florida's quarterback Wayne Pease gave Florida a 21-20 lead, and in one of the most famous plays in Georgia sports history, not just football, but in Georgia sports history, and everybody remembers Larry Munson's call, Buck Ballew found Lindsey Scott for a 93-yard touchdown. The famous run, Lindsey. And Georgia won 26-21 that afternoon. The place went wild. Everybody who ever heard that game remembers hearing it for the first time. It's always in every highlight reel of great Georgia plays, great Larry Munson plays. That afternoon, Georgia Tech was playing Notre Dame. Notre Dame was ranked number 1 ahead of Georgia. They were playing in Atlanta. Both independent schools at that time. Tech was not in the ACC, and Tech managed somehow to tie Notre Dame that day, 3-3, and Georgia moved into the top spot in the country, and there they would remain. The next week, they went on the road to play Auburn, ranked number 1. They won that game 31-21. Herschel rushed for 84 yards that day. November 29th, my 16th birthday, a memorable day for me in many ways. They played Georgia Tech. Herschel ran for 205 yards that day, and they won 38-20. They finished the season 11-0. There was no SEC championship game then, so Georgia had the best record in the SEC. They got the invitation to come to the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans, which is where the SEC champions went. Now, there's no college football playoff then. There was just simply the polls, and Georgia finished the season ranked number 1. They were invited to play Dan Devine's Notre Dame team for the first time ever on January 1st, 1981. Notre Dame was ranked number 7 going into that game, and Georgia won that one 17-10. Now, just to tell you again a little bit how different the sports landscape was then, the national championship game is going to be played this coming Monday, January 8th. The game time start is like 8:30. It'll be on ESPN. It has been talked about since they set up the matchup, or they set up the four college football teams who were playing in the playoff. That game was played at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on January 1st. Nothing special about it. The fact that it was a national championship game, it got slotted where the Sugar Bowl always got slotted. Keith Jackson was on ABC making that call. I well remember, because I had now had my driver's license for approximately 1 month, when that game was over, again, my friend Scott Hawes and Chip Avant and I got into my 1977 Cutlass Supreme and drove around Snellville honking the horn and hooting and hollering and yelling, and I got pulled over by a Snellville police officer who cautioned me to turn my lights on if I was going to celebrate like that driving around town. I have never forgotten that day, and that, friends, is the last time the University of Georgia won the national championship, but they have reached at least the summit as they will play again this Monday night. Again, no predictions, but of course, we're pulling for the University of Georgia here at Off the Deaton Path for all kinds of reasons. We recorded today from the first floor study hall at Millage Hall at the University of Georgia. And by the way, I should have mentioned that if you wanted to fast forward through all of the content and simply get to the credits, as some people do, and I'm not naming any names, Jeanette, you could have done so. We're recording from the first floor study hall at Millage Hall at the University of Georgia, where I stayed and lived for two memorable and historic years in the early 80s. Our producer today has been Otto Wagenhurst. That's right. As always, if you have any complaints about this show, please contact Otto. Any good things you have to say about how much you love this show or you love the sound of my voice and how it doesn't put you to sleep like it did my dad on Christmas Eve, please shoot me an email at sdeaton@georgiahistory.com. Our mailman is usually one Gary F. Taylor, born and raised, that's right, but he has been excommunicated this week and is not allowed to deliver any mail to Off Deaton Path because he is a self-proclaimed Bama fan. So Gary will be back on our next show. Our legal counsel this week is provided by the law offices of Gallipo and Taylor, where their motto is around the bowl and down the hole, roll, tide, roll. The hardest working engineer in show business is Brendan Cannonball Crellin, our very own. Catering this week provided, as always, by Hagee's House of Tacos, home of the Drippy Enchilada. Beverages provided by Drost Brewery, where their motto is, and always has been, beer, because that's what your right hand is for. You can find out everything that's going on at the Georgia Historical Society by visiting our website at georgiahistory.com. Check out all the excitement of the upcoming Georgia History Festival at georgiahistoryfestival.org. And you can find this blog at Google Play if you have an Android, or at the iTunes Store or the podcast app on your iPhone. Tell your friends and family, because after all, why should you be the only one who is miserable? And you can find similarly painful podcasts and other nonsense at my blog at offthedeatonpath.georgiahistory.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week, and go Dawgs!